Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
So if you listen to Barack Obama's news conference earlier this week, at the very end came a question that perhaps during other presidencies, other news conferences would have come much closer to the beginning. Listen.
Mr. President, you came to office pledging to work for peace between Israel and the Palestinians. How realistic do you think those hopes are now, given the likelihood of a prime minister who is not fully signed up to a two-state solution and a foreign minister who has been accused of insulting Arabs?
It's not easier than it was, but I think it's just as necessary.
An interesting sort of emblematic statement from President Barack Obama in his first question at his second news conference about the state of peace or the possibility for peace in the Middle East. Joining us now, we are thrilled to have former U.S. Ambassador to Israel and Assistant Secretary of State for Near East Affairs during the Clinton administration, Martin Indyk. He's currently the director of the Saban Center for Middle Eastern Policy at the Brookings Institution. He has a new book out, which I highly recommend. It's called Innocent Abroad, An Intimate Account of American Peace Diplomacy in the Middle East. Ambassador Indyk, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks. I'm thrilled to be with you.
Well, let's talk first of all about the Barack Obama response to that question about the Benjamin Netanyahu government, which hasn't been fully formed yet. It's not clear if it's going to be a fully right-wing coalition or a right-wing center coalition. What do you make of Barack Obama's answer? And is it the case that it's not easier with Benjamin Netanyahu as prime minister in Israel?
Well, the response was hardly what you'd call a warm embrace of the prospective new partners in peacemaking, and I think raised some eyebrows in amongst pro-Israelis around town. But he went on to say something which I think is also very important. He used it, in a sense, as an indicator of his whole approach to all of the problems that he faces now, which is persistence. He kept on saying, what I believe in is persisting even though it's not clear how we can succeed. And I think he's exactly right in that regard. The new government in formation in Israel is going to be not a narrow right-wing government, which is what it looked like it would be for the last month or so, but rather one that also includes the Labour Party. And Ehud Barak, former prime minister and former competitor to Bibi Netanyahu, will be his partner as defence minister. And this gives the government a more stable coalition, a more balanced coalition. And it's possible, we'll have to see, that Bibi in his reincarnation as a second prime minister will decide that his legacy should be this time bringing Israel to peace.
And many traditional right-wingers in Israel have come to that conclusion, including Ariel Sharon, Menachem Begin, that essentially the legacy has to be peace, not a narrow, more right-wing approach. Let's talk a little bit about your book. One of the reasons it's been given, I think, amazing reviews and why I enjoyed it so much is it's not preachy. It's not sort of, saying what should be the solution. It is a real sort of accounting of what is important in solid diplomacy. And in characterizing the Clinton administration, it seems to me you've told the story of how important it is for leaders to recognize what is hard in negotiations and what is easy, and that Bill Clinton, in a sense, got that terribly wrong.
Well, he got one thing terribly right, which brings me back to Obama's point. He believed strongly that it was better to try, even if you fail, than not to try at all. And the problem with George W. Bush was that he believed the opposite, that it was better not to try at all than to try and fail. And he only came around to it in his last year. And then it was even harder. Clinton, I think, thought that, and I was with him in this, I was advising him on this at the beginning of the administration, that there was a wide window that had opened of opportunity to end the Arab-Israeli conflict. And we, that's why I called it Innocent Abroad, because we kind of sallied forth into the bazaars of the Middle East believing that we could actually resolve these conflicts. And it's the wonderful thing about Americans that we think, we can do this. but the innocence, the lack of understanding that this is immensely complicated, and you're dealing with undercurrents and cross currents. Things are interconnected in ways that we don't really understand. We can't read the minds of authoritarian leaders, and we find ourselves soon sucked down into the swamps of the region and find it very difficult to get out.
Well, you know, the lesson that George W. Bush drew from the experience of the Clinton administration was it's better not to try. But I'm wondering if maybe one of the lessons from your book is it would have been better if we had tried harder. In both the case of Yasser Arafat and Ehud Barak, who were principals during the Clinton administration, it seemed in the end they feared to go forward, a fear that might have been diminished if Bill Clinton or you had pushed harder.
Yes, but it's hard. It's always easier in retrospect. I think in the case with Barak, we really had an opportunity to have a breakthrough to peace with Syria. And Barak was ready to make the deal, make the offer of full withdrawal from the Golan, but he just felt that he needed to negotiate a bit longer to show his public that he was being a tough negotiator. And the timing was critically important. And Clinton tried to move Barak, but he failed. And I think at that moment, actually, counterintuitively, he would have been much better closing his folder and telling Barak, listen, I can't do anything more for you.
Calling a bluff.
Exactly.
Right.
And just kind of saying, you know, that's it. If you can't do the deal now, then I can't help you.
Well, it's a very different window today, as Barack Obama suggested in his news conference. So what do you make of Israel's sense of isolation going into this new government, something that's been talked about in The New York Times repeatedly, and we've mentioned it on this program, and also the state of political chaos within the Palestinian movement?
Well, I think that Israel's isolation is too much is made of that. I think that Israel finds itself with strong relationships, not only with the United States, but with Europe, with Russia, with China, with Japan. You know, it's a very different kind of Israel today. Israel's big problem is that it's fighting an asymmetric war with Hezbollah and Hamas and other terrorist organizations, and the defense capabilities that it's built up over the years with our assistance do not work effectively in these circumstances, and it has not yet developed an effective strategy for dealing with these Iranian-backed challenges. And then, of course, it faces the problem of nuclear Iran, an Iran that's heading seemingly in leaps and bounds towards acquiring nuclear weapons.
Would you advise direct talks with Iran, Hamas, and Hezbollah, or any of the above?
No, I think, you know, it's a complicated answer to a simple question. But I think that the Israelis do understand that it's important for Obama to try to head off Iran's nuclear program through diplomacy. And they seem to be prepared to give that a chance. I suspect that if Netanyahu, when he comes to Washington, can feel reassured from Obama on the issue of the existential threat from Iran, that he will be willing in exchange to be more flexible and more forward-leaning when it comes to dealing with the Palestinians.
Hope, possibly flexibility. The words of Martin Indyk, former U.S. ambassador to Israel and assistant secretary of state for Near East Affairs during the Clinton administration. His new book is called Innocent Abroad, an intimate account of American peace diplomacy in the Middle East. Ambassador, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
If you missed anything, we're always on here at The Takeaway. Take our podcast to go. You'll want to hear that interview with Martin Indyk again. Subscribe at thetakeaway.org or iTunes. Your takeaway?
It's like we're always fighting the last regulatory war, trying to stop the last bubble from happening again. And, of course, they always find a way to create something new.
Dan Gross and me waiting for the next bubble. This is The Takeaway.